And now you can hear me as I talk. We are going to have a singing this afternoon, and that's going to be at 4:45 for all of those that like to sing and want to come and just sing some of the songs. We're going to sing a lot of the old songs. We're going to sing some of the new songs. And any of you that are song leaders and you want to lead two songs, if you will write those on a piece of paper and hand them to me and then show up, because we will put these together on that, if you will. It is an awesome thing to contemplate God. One of the things that I think we have lost, particularly in American society, is that childlike quality to simply be impressed. It's always interesting to me to watch little kids when they first discover something. And you can see it in their eyes and in their face and their little bodies. They just get excited because they've never seen anything like this, and they're trying to figure it out. And if we really begin to comprehend God, what will happen is we will begin to see God as God. And that song that we just sang, I think really ought to be part of our vocabulary. Not necessarily to sing the song all the time, but if that's all right too. But to arise in the morning and realize that God is still there and has caused the sun and the moon and the stars and kept everything together. To sit down at your breakfast table and recognize that God has given us our homes and our food and our jobs. And our ability to recognize that He has given that to us. And to stand in awe of God. If I could do one thing as a preacher, I wished I could create that in every person that ever listened to what I taught. If we could do that, we wouldn't have to teach about a lot of the moral issues and the things that God has told us to do. Because when we learn who God is and we stand in awe of God, we will want to be like Him and we will want to do that which is right. One of the interesting things is when Jesus came and He began teaching the people. It says in the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7, that when He finished the sermon, they were amazed. They stood in awe of Jesus. And what they were in awe of Jesus was His teaching. He taught them as one that knew what He was talking about. It made sense. He taught them as one that had authority. That is, He was not guessing at this. And it was not just His opinion about what is going on. He simply spoke to them directly and simply and earnestly. This is what life is about. This is what God says for us to do and to be. And so because of that, it's one of those sermons that you're never done with. When we go to China, one of the things we a lot of times will do is they love to read in English. And I don't know whether they're trying to show off their English skills or just, it's fun to read in a foreign language. So we spend part of our time just having them read certain passages out of the Bible, and then we begin talking with them about what they have read. And one of the passages we read often is the Beatitudes. And I always remember the first year that I went, we had a young man that considered himself an intellectual, And so he wanted to have all of these theological discussions about the nature of God and what that would mean and all of that. And so we stopped that very quickly and said, you know, we'll have all this discussion, but we're here to talk about Jesus, and the best way to show you who Jesus is would you read this for us? And he started in with the Beatitudes. And those begin in Matthew chapter 5. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was seated, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they who do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets who were before them. This is a biblical understanding of an age-old question that we always ask. How can I be successful in life? Nobody sets out to be mediocre. We set out to write or to do or to act or to play. We want to be recognized and good and stand out. Of course, very few of us do. But that's what we want to do. And so when Jesus began talking with this first century crowd, they had the same concepts as you and I do on when we talk about success. Many of them thought, to be successful, if I just could get rich, then I would have the world by the tail and everything would fall into place, and I would simply be a success in life. Many of them were seeking after social status. If I could just be the most popular person in my community, then I would be happy and blessed and life would be fulfilled. Many of them sought power, either political power or power to rule over people, even if it wasn't a legitimate political power. Many other people, though, spent their time studying Plato and Socrates and life because they were going to figure all of this out. And you know, once you go down that road, and of course there are some other formulas, but you know, no matter what I put up here, there's one big problem. You die. And the question that you begin asking at that point is, was it a success? And here's the fellow laying on the street, dead. And he's got $1 million in his pocket. So what? You recognize he's got a PhD in something, and the answer is, he's dumber than me now. He doesn't know anything. Or the political power that he may have had, he has none now. And if he had any social standing, he's not going to get invited to very many parties now. And all of that just came to a screeching halt. And so you began asking yourself, And the question really now takes on a difference than it did 10 minutes before he died. What is success? I raised my children with the idea that I was going to set before them how to have a successful life. And you know, I look back on it now and I wonder, did I emphasize the wrong things? Did I emphasize the right things enough? I tried and I thought. And you know, as you get older, you do get wiser. And you wish sometimes I could go back and redo that, but I always laugh, you'd just make a different mistake the next time. But it would be different. And so as we begin looking at this, Jesus points us in a whole other direction. And what He says is nothing about money and nothing about power and nothing about social status. That's not what is a successful life. And that's as radical today as it was then. I know you all have television sets. Some of you don't watch it. Good on you. What is a successful life according to TV? And you know, I mean, all of the stuff you have to buy and the jobs you have to be in, where you have to live and who you have to know and all of that. And not a thing has changed in 2,000 years, 4,000 years over the worldly standard. But Jesus said, it's not worked. It doesn't work. And here's the way to go. And so He begins talking about the kingdom of God. In fact, throughout Matthew, they substitute the word God for the kingdom of heaven. We don't know exactly why they did that, but it doesn't really matter because our God is the God that lives in heaven. And His kingdom is a kingdom of heaven and about spiritual realms. And so this is not a worldly kingdom. This is a heavenly kingdom. And so He told Pilate in John chapter 18, Pilate said, "Are you then a king?" And Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." Because His kingdom pertains to something that is far different than what Pilate wanted or what the emperors wanted or what America wants. It has to do with our spirit. It has to do with God. It has to do with that part of our life that relates us not to the world, but rather to the Creator of the world. And that relationship, Jesus says, is firmly planted on character. God is not impressed with our money. God is not impressed with our political power or our social status. What God sees and takes note of is our character. And when we begin talking about character, character is not that, at least in Jesus' estimation, that which is natural. Because as you read through again these Beatitudes, I know a few people that one or two of these Beatitudes were somewhat inborn in their character. But most of them do not exist until we develop it. And when you begin looking at this type of character thing, these are not to be understood as independent proverbs. But I've never figured out how to talk about eight things at the same time. So, we talk about them one at a time, and I will do that this morning. But I want you to just simply recognize we're not really talking about eight different things. We're talking about eight different aspects of the same thing. And these are the aspects of our character and our relationship with God. And these then describe what people that are in a right relationship with God are like. I wrestle with, are these qualifications in order to be part of God's kingdom? And in one sense, yeah. Because if you lack these, you're not in a right relationship with God. But I'm not convinced Jesus set them forth as qualifications in order to be this. I think what Jesus is talking about is people that are this are the ones in the right relationship with God. And if you ever want to be in a right relationship with God, then this is who you are. This is not about your job. This is not about your family or your bank account. This is about who you are in your mind, in your relationship with other people, in your relationship with God. And he said the very first one, which is just absolutely outstanding, blessed are the poor in spirit. And again, poor in spirit is not what they lack. It's what they are. Being poor in spirit is the opposite of being proud and arrogant and puffed up. And that comes from the song that we sang, I Stand in Awe of God. For when we come and we see who God is in the truth of our being, we then recognize, I have nothing to be proud of. Paul asked a question to the Corinthians, what do you have that you were not given? Life. No, God gave you life. Health. No, God gives us health. And everything that we have includes that which God has given to us. And so, I stand in awe of God. In Him we live and we move and we have our very being. We give Him thanks for He gives us the power to get riches. We give Him thanks for without Him we would not be politicians. We would not be doctors. We would not be lawyers. We would not be poor in spirit. And you know, that's not always easy to come by. In Luke chapter 18, Jesus told a story, a parable. And there were two religious men. One of them happened to be Pharisee, scribe. And he stood on the street corner and lifted up his eyes unto heaven and looked around about him and said, God, I thank you that I'm not like all the rest of these people. I thank you that I fast twice a week and I do this and I do that. The other one was a sinner. He wouldn't even look up into heaven. But rather looking down at the ground, he beat on his breast and he said, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. He was poor in spirit. He knew that he was wrong with God. He knew that he had sinned. He knew that he had no ability to undo all that he has done. And only when we finally come to that realization are we ever really able to come back to God and to see what God has done for us and what Jesus means and what the Lord's Supper is all about. And when we begin seeing that, then we begin having a grasp on what life is really like. Jesus then said, blessed are those that mourn. And again, the same story. This man would not look up into heaven. But he beat upon his breast and he said, be merciful to me, a sinner. He understood that his relationship with God was absolutely wrong. And he needed God to be merciful. The idea of mourning here obviously takes on again a spiritual concept. I was watching a baseball game the other day and my team lost. And it was sad. Sad, sad day. But there's next year. And as you begin looking at that, what you begin seeing is, that's not what Jesus is talking about. And He's not talking about loss of money or loss of political power or loss of... What He's talking about is that which relates us to God and we realize is not right. Then what we have is godly sorrow. The Apostle Paul wrote a scathing letter to the Corinthian church that was so ungodly. And basically what Paul said was, y'all got to quit this nonsense. That's my interpretation. That what you're doing is wrong and ungodly, and you cannot live this way and hope to live with God eternally. And after he wrote the letter, he said in 2 Corinthians 7, I was sorry I wrote it. But then I decided I wasn't sorry I wrote it because it caused you to sorrow unto repentance. And then he makes a fabulous statement. Godly sorrow works repentance, which you will never be sorry for. If you understand what it is and how it works, you can never be sorry that you repented of sins if it puts you back in a right relationship. And so, blessed are those that are poor in spirit. And blessed are those that mourn about their spiritual condition and what they are. And blessed are those that are meek. There's not really a good way to translate this into the English because we have the word meek, and what it usually means is cowardly and scared. And Jesus was meek. Come unto me, I am meek and lowly of heart. Moses was said to be meek. And you watch Moses or you watch Jesus, and when they encountered sin and ungodliness, they did not step back from that. They were not cowards. They denounced it in no uncertain terms. They stood and they faced it toe to toe, and they said, that is unacceptable to God. Meekness, then, is really the idea that with all of their power that they could have called, they did not. Recall, Jesus could have called the angels, but He did not. That's meekness. Old-time commentators usually would liken it to a wild stallion that is just, you know, the power and the... But you tame that. And now you can sit on its back, and with two little ropes coming out the side of its mouth, you can guide this horse that has all of this power at its disposal, but now it's trained. And the training of that is the idea of meekness. And it's with all of the abilities that God gave me, I know how to live. I know how to control that. I know how to use the abilities that God gave me. Blessed are the meek, for when you learn that, you've gained the whole world. It's at your disposal. Jesus said, blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. This is a hard one for us because we've never really been hungry. We have never really been so thirsty that we're just going to die, except at 10:45 on Sunday morning when we just have to get a drink. But again, to hunger and to thirst to be right with God. When I don't care whether I eat, I want to be right with God. I don't care whether I have any money. I don't care whether I have any friends. I don't care even if you're going to kill me for this. I'm going to be right with God. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. In our song book, in one of the psalms that was based on them, as a deer pants for water, so my soul longs after God. Did you ever wake up in the middle of the night wondering whether you're here or there? And then found yourself disappointed because you're here? You know, that's not the way we do it. I can't wait till the time that I wake up and I'm not here. Because that's what we're trying to accomplish. And how am I going to get there? And how am I going to do that? And the answer is, you've got to be right with God. And so you set out to be right with God. And you don't let anything come in your way. All of the temptations, all of the worldly things that would pull us away, our friends, our family, life itself. If you want to be right with God, nothing can stop you from it. But you got to want it with all of your heart. You know, I often feel that as a preacher I've been pretty pathetic. Now, y'all need to listen to what I'm going to say here. Because I find it very, very, very difficult to create that desire in other people. In fact, I'm not sure that any man can create that. But we try and we make that a goal and we're going to fail all of the time. You are the one that will make that desire happen. And the way that you make it happen is a simple, simple thing. Just hard to do. You got to know God. This is eternal life. John chapter 17, verse 4, that you might know God. And when you know God as God really is, not as we wish He would be, but when we see who He is, we then long to spend eternity in the presence of God. And that's when we begin hungering and thirsting after that which is righteous. And you know, it shows in your life. It really does. We lie to ourselves. We deceive ourselves. We lie to each other about it. But you know, you don't have to spend very long with a person to find out what his real love of life is. Don't have to spend very much listening to a person to find out what is it that consumes their life and their desire and their thoughts. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful. We ought to forgive one another even as God forgave us. When we recognize that we stand before God only on the basis of the fact that He forgave me of all of those transgressions, how dare anybody not be merciful to other people? And if we're not merciful unto each other, Jesus said in the next chapter, God will not be merciful to you. If you will not forgive others, you will not be forgiven. But, you see, I see a difference here. It's not God commanding me to do this. It's when I've experienced it and what it's like and the joy that we have. How can I withhold that from somebody else? How can I be more righteous than God Himself? So blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. To love God with all of your heart means that you're not double-hearted. Is that a proper phrase? But you can't be double-hearted because you cannot love God and money. For if you try to love God and money, what happens is you love one and not the other, or you love the other and not the one. That's what Jesus said. In the book of James, it talks about how we ought to purify our hearts, you double-minded people. And again, the purity of heart means that I am single-focused in life. Have you ever known anybody that was really single-focused in life? Well, I get that way occasionally about certain things, don't you? There'll be certain things that I'll be doing, and I'm going to tell you what. I don't hear the phone ring. I don't hear the doorbell. I don't hear my wife talking to me. I don't get hungry. You get single-minded. Of course, the problem with that is it's temporary. And in our relationship with God, it's temporary. I found, even in my own life, and I'm an expert on this one. When I first was converted, I read and read and read the book. It was just absolutely fascinating. And then periodically in my life, I step back and I go, okay, what's fascinating to you today? And I find that my focus has shifted. And it'll be over here. And so you got to pull it back. And if we're going to be right with God, then what He says is, we're going to be single-minded about this. Focused. And not like shotguns trying to hit everything at the same time. Blessed are the peacemakers. By the way, this has absolutely nothing to do with world peace. And the reason I say that is, if you could get everybody to just quit being mean to each other, they still are not right with God. And what good does it do if we can get an armistice on every nation of this, and they still are not right with God? And again, this are spiritual concepts. Rather than worldly concepts. Peacemaker in the sense of with God. If you're right with God, how can you not share that? If you have learned what makes you right with God, how can you not share that? If you observe somebody that you love that is not right with God and are doing the wrong things, how can you not talk with them about that? And you see, when you put all of these together, the meek and the mournful, and we will be peacemakers. We will seek to be right with God, and I'm going to drag you with me. And you're going to drag me. And together, we'll be right with God. And then, this probably caused the whole audience to go, oh! Did you all catch the funny part of this? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be persecuted. What? But in their position, that is what he said. And when we set out to get people to be right with God, you can count on it, many of them not going to want that. Jesus was the light of the world and He came into the light and the men loved darkness rather than light, John chapter 1. So Jesus came unto His own and His own received Him not. Jesus came and He taught the people the truth and they crucified Him. And so Jesus said, if you're going to follow what I teach in this world, you will have problems. This is not a formula to have a happy worldly life. I know I've seen it that way. Go down here to the bookstore, if you can find one that's still in business, and find the self-help section, and somebody there will have this whole thing on how you can have this happy, worldly life. But do you remember where we started? The bugaboo with that is, you die. And the truth of the matter is, wasn't all that happy before you died. Here is the purpose and the foundation of life. I'm going to be right with God. And if the rest of the world doesn't like it, that's okay. And no matter what they do, it's okay. And you may be abused, lied about, falsely accused, and that's okay. I didn't do it. That's okay. God knows not only what I did, but God knows my heart and my intent. And God gets to be my judge, and that's why I want to be right with God above all else. Now, take a look. And I want you to just memorize that chart. Now, y'all are going to forget that, so when you get home, look it up. It's Matthew chapter 5. That ought to be a snapshot of your character. We were sitting around bored one time, trying to think of something fun to do. It's kind of weird to sit around with other Christians and do that. And I always remember Charlotte Hunt said, I know what sounds like fun. Why don't we write each other's obituary while we're still alive? Does that sound like fun to you? Actually, I thought it did. Let me write yours tomorrow. You all come over to my house and I'm just going to sit down and I'll tell you what I'm going to say about you when it's your turn and I get to preach. Oh, that doesn't sound like much fun at all. But wouldn't it be wonderful if all we could do is just rip out Matthew chapter 5 and hand it and say, that's the obituary. If you want to know what this fellow was like, that's what he was like. And I guarantee you, if that can be said about you, your life was a success. It's really simple. Jesus then gave the success. And what He did was, every one of those things that you're seeking, if you seek it with a pure heart and all of your heart, you will find it. And when you find that, your reward is in heaven. So Jesus went on to say in Matthew chapter 7, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but rather he that is willing to do the will of my Father which is in heaven. And if you're here this morning, I'm going to tell you, you can go to heaven if you want to. God wants you to. Jesus wants you to. We want you to. But you have to want to. And you have to want to enough that you want to be right with God. And being right with God is simply, can I walk with God? He said, preach the news of the resurrection to every creature. He that believes and is baptized can be saved. I am astounded in my years of preaching at how many people stumble at that point. I want to be right with God, but I'm not doing that. I want to be right with God, but that doesn't make any sense to me. I want to be right with God, but I'm going to do it my way, not His way. And you can't do that. But if you're willing to be right with God, you can. And if you believe that Jesus was raised from the dead and you're willing to submit unto Him, being baptized in His name for the remission of your sin, you can be right with God and then work at being this person of the Beatitudes. And if you're willing to do that, we invite you to come. Together we stand and sing.